Armen spänna. Armen bort. Gati për zjarë. Zjarë! 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 Armen.
In the western Kosovo village of Chushka, an honor guard of the Kosovo Liberation Army blasts a funeral salute at the sky. A sobbing woman drops to her knees, grasping fistfuls of dirt from the burial mound. This public ceremony is a time for grieving families to gather safely in honor of the 41 unarmed men executed here months earlier. The May 14th massacre was part of a broad attack by Serb security and militia forces on Kosovar Albanians in Chushka and two neighboring villages. Survivors say that hundreds of unarmed people were forced from their homes to the center of the village and brutally robbed of money and jewelry. In a matter of hours, Serb forces killed 72 civilians, including two women. A third woman was kidnapped by the fighters and never seen again.
Po ata ishin atë maskum, ishin me litarë këtu, të kuqe, të bardhe, të dhije.
The soldiers had face paint and some wear bandanas for masks. They were wearing a mixture of uniforms. Some were police officers and some were the Yugoslav army.
Akif is a farmer, a small, wiry 57-year-old with graying hair. On the morning of May 14th, the militia seized him and his family.
They took us to the village cemetery. They separated the men from the women, the men they thought could fight. Then they started burning houses and shooting at people's feet to scare them. They divided us men into three groups and took us away. There were 11 men in my group. They took us inside a neighbor's house and lined us against the living room wall. They cursed us, then demanded more money. But we had already given them all the money we had.
That was the house that he first say that they separate them, one group of 11
and then the group came down. And then the group came down. And then they drew
power. The soldier come to the door and he said, in the name of Serbia, you will all be killed.
E meni here atje. Dhe qika I ka dhon rëfal.
And he will confire.
Se gjithë kanë met dhekun.
All was killed.
Po një natë farveni, ka bo një here.
Though a bullet punctured his thigh, Akif was saved by the bodies of his brother Halil and a man who had a bad heart.
When you say the name of Serbia, you will all be killed. That guy, Ibrahim Menti, he had a heart attack and he fell dead in front of him.
So two men fell on top of him, really?
Yeah.
Before the killers left, they tossed a cushion soaked with gasoline into the room where Akif lay hidden by the other bodies. The fire was almost certainly meant to destroy the evidence.
The door outside was on fire, but fortunately there was a window. I jumped from the window and ran, bleeding, into a grassy field, and that's where I hid.
At the same time, two other groups of men from the village were taken to separate houses, gunned down, and set on fire. In each house, one man survived. And while it's extraordinary to find three people in one village who escaped alive from an atrocity, Chushka is important for another reason. The survivors of the mass killings can identify some of their attackers by face and by name. That gives investigators a specific list of suspects. Men who could explain not only who pulled the triggers in Chushka, but the machinery behind the murders and deportations across Kosovo. The evidence in Chushka points to direct involvement by police and military forces that answer to Slobodan Milosevic. Many Serbs allegedly responsible for atrocities in Kosovo can now be found in the cafes of Montenegro, especially the capital city of Podgorica. Montenegro is a Yugoslav republic just a short drive from the killing fields of Kosovo. When they left Kosovo, the militias brought along their stolen money, stolen cars, and their stories to tell.
I was recruited into a militia group called Lightning. I was told our task was ethnic cleansing, you know, expelling people from their houses. But there were other jobs to do, not just cleansing.
We'll call this man Bronco. Like all the militia members interviewed for this report, he insisted on giving a false name. Bronco is a burly middle-aged guy in a sports shirt who chain-smokes cigarettes. Bronco was a bank robber before the war and one of a dozen former militiamen, police, and soldiers interviewed in Montenegro. The other jobs Bronco did in the Serbian militia included tracking down Albanians who were marked for arrest or execution.
We were also targeting the influential Albanians and eliminating anyone who supported the idea of an independent Kosovo.
Like all the fighters interviewed, Bronco joined his militia group before NATO's air attack in March. He was based in his hometown of Peć, a city of 100,000 people in the province's ethnic Albanian heartland. The village of Čuška is just a few miles away. Because Peć had a sizable Serbian population and important Serbian religious shrines, the city became a headquarters for Serbian militias. Bronco says all the attacks on Albanian homes and villages he took part in were ordered by Serb police and military officials based in Peć.
The leader of the patrol would be told where to go, what kind of men we were looking for. We were given lists of people by our top commander. He got them from the city authorities and from the Serbian National Police. If someone was on the list, he would be arrested. If he resisted, well, then you had to kill him.
Bronco and the other Serb militiamen insisted on meeting in neutral public places like noisy cafes. They agreed to talk for a number of reasons: to voice disgust at the Serbian loss of Kosovo, to rail against NATO's air war, or to brag about their wartime glories. Milan is an unshaven young man with darting, troubled eyes. He said he went to Kosovo from Serbia to fight for his nation and fatten his wallet.
I went to Kosovo to take their money, and so that's what I did. I took their money. In return, we freed some of them, but we also killed some of them. We didn't care. I don't know how many we killed. I didn't pay attention to trivial details. All I know is that the only good Albanian was a dead Albanian.
Both Milan and another militia member, a guy we'll call Marco, said what happened at Čuška was typical of the thoroughly organized Serbian militia operations.
When orders came in to cleanse a village, the police or army would direct the operation. They would seal the area off with troops, and the army might lob some shells in, especially if they thought guerrillas were there. When the time was right, the police would send in the militias, and they would usually finish off the men of fighting age. I mean, what's the point of letting them go to Albania if you know they'll just come back and fight us?
None of the 12 Serb fighters interviewed admitted to being in Čuška on May 14th. When the militias pulled out of Kosovo in early June, some left behind a record of what they had done. Returning Albanians found military documents such as logbooks and even photographs the Serbs took of themselves in action. Human Rights Watch investigator Fred Abrahams got hold of a series of color snapshots that showed Serbian fighters in full combat gear.
The photographs clearly have a weekend warrior, Rambo-esque aura about them. They're quite remarkable. Clearly these were local military units. I don't know whether they were police, whether they were private militias, but they showed local Serbs in various military poses in front of burning homes with automatic weapons in full uniform.
Abrahams scanned the photographs into his laptop and headed back to the village of Čuška, where he powered up the computer screen for Akif and his 27-year-old niece, Lule.
We got these photos from the local prefect, from KLA, local Serbs who were active in various paramilitary units, one called Lightning. So they'll look now to see if they can recognize any of the faces.
Yeah.
Shown the photographs, Atif and Lula react immediately, pointing at the screen, exclaiming, "That's him." Lula begins to shake as she recalls how on May 14th, the man in the photo, wearing the same green fatigues, wooden cross, and hunting knife, pulled her away from the other villagers and threatened to kill her family unless she followed him into an empty house.
It's the same guy, nobody else. If I saw him 10 years from now, I'd still recognize him. He's the one that took me aside and threatened to rape me. He was the commander.
In separate interviews, six witnesses identified the bearded, barrel-chested man in the photograph as having been in Chushka on May 14th. Several described the man as a commander in the unit. Three witnesses confirmed the man's name, Srećko Popović. He is now believed to live in Serbia. In another photograph, Popović stands next to a man that multiple witnesses identified as Slaviša Kastratović. Both men lived in Peć before the war. More importantly, both were identified by fellow Serbian militiamen as members of the paramilitary group Lightning. Several former members of the group are now living in Montenegro. Milan was one of them. With a kind of smirking pride, Milan described his long criminal history and explained that Lightning was a strange amalgamation of Serbian cops, felons, and ultranationalists.
Most of our group were from the criminal underground, and we were able to continue that kind of activity, robbing and so on. Of course, we were fighting for the Serbian cause, but also to get rich.
Milan says there were countless ways to profit from the suffering of Albanians.
Early on, the Serbian secret police were transporting Albanians safely to the border by hiding them in the trunk. They charged them $2,700. When the guys in my unit heard about this, we started doing it too. Later, after the NATO bombing got worse, I wouldn't bother taking the Albanian to the border. I would just take their money and kill them.
The man behind these kinds of operations in Peć was a 38-year-old convicted felon named Nebojša Minić. Minić called himself Mrtvi, Serbian for the dead. Friends and enemies alike described Mrtvi as an apt nickname. In one of the snapshots left behind, Minić wears the blue camouflage of the Yugoslav National Police and cradles a large caliber machine gun, staring menacingly toward the camera. One of his foot soldiers, Branko, says Minić was responsible for killing dozens of ethnic Albanians in and around Peć.
He was extreme from the beginning. He was a man on the edge, always. He was full of hatred for Albanians. He had done criminal activities with them and he was strict. So he was full of revenge. He would murder an entire family, a mother, brother, or sister just for that.
Lightning and other militias demanded protection money from Albanians. Former Lightning member Milan explained what typically happened when villagers could not pay. The operation sounds a lot like May 14th in Chushka.
We were in a village for an hour or two. The Albanians could come out and offer us money right away. We took the money and got more. There were Albanian families working for the army giving information. And their lives were spared. Others were killed.
Milan's unit was one of many that included convicts who were released from Serbian prisons on condition that they go fight in Kosovo. One ex-prisoner is Marko, a muscular underworld figure decked out in gold medallions, designer sunglasses, and Bermuda shorts. Marko says he was serving 5 years for armed assault when he was pulled from prison, trained in a Yugoslav police camp in Serbia, and given a gun.
My orders were to arrest people and bring them in. Then there were special orders to bring in certain individuals, dead or alive. I liquidated 5 or 6 people that way. We arrested important people, political types, functionaries.
Marko and the other militia members interviewed said their units were sponsored by Serbian gangsters and warlords with close connections to Milosevic's secret police. These sponsors paid the fighters salaries and arranged for weapons and ammunition from the army in exchange for a large cut of the stolen Albanian property. Marko says his benefactor was the infamous Jelko Raznatović, better known as Arkan. Both political leader and reputed gangster, Arkan was indicted by the Hague Tribunal for committing war crimes in Bosnia and Croatia earlier this decade. When Marko was deployed by Arkan's deputies in Peć, He says they gave him lists of Albanians to arrest and execute.
These lists came from all over. The police and city authorities had a kind of war council to plot strategy. They had been collecting this kind of information for years. Who were the rich Albanians, where they lived, who were the important Albanians, and when they lived.
The lists came from local army and police commanders, but also from higher up. An officer from an elite Serbian secret police unit, who refused to let his name be used, said he relayed detailed orders for ethnic cleansing operations, orders which originated in the Yugoslav National Police Headquarters in Belgrade, directly to police and militia commanders in western Kosovo. The orders included lists of towns and villages to be attacked.
The order to move Albanians out came from Belgrade, from the very top. Our initial focus was on areas where the KLA had support, like Tech.
The officer said that what began as a legitimate battle against Albanian terrorists in western Kosovo quickly descended into a total war against Albanian civilians. He and two other self-described military professionals expressed contempt for any Serbs who murdered Albanian civilians, as opposed to guerrillas. Nevertheless, he says that after NATO began its aerosol, the militia thugs became an essential part of the Serbian cleansing machine.
And once the airstrikes began, everything got worse. We became more dependent on the militias and special units because our army recruits were not doing the job. Everything got turned upside down. Here I was, a cop, having to work with criminals who should be in jail.
The fact that those criminals were not arrested but were unleashed by the state to carry out the war's dirtiest operations demonstrates to investigators that the militias were anything but rogue elements. American Radio Works obtained Yugoslav Army documents apparently showing that at the time of the massacre in Chuška, the army had taken control of all civilian institutions in Pec, including the police. The army major who signed that decree also signed a logbook in which military forces were ordered to intensify operations around Chuška just before the attack. Again, Fred Abrahams of Human Rights Watch.
I am deeply, deeply convinced, based on our extensive research, that there was a very clear chain of command that led all the way up to the top, including Milosevic. And not that he was making specific military calls, but that no major action took place without his knowledge. Chushk is one of many examples where this took place.
Investigators also say the army and the militias tried to hide their tracks in Chuška and other places. They burned bodies, tossed corpses down wells, and mixed animal bones in mass graves with human remains. Forensic and human rights investigators say this was a deliberate strategy that Serbian commanders learned from mistakes made earlier in Bosnia and Croatia.
There are still some bones around here. Human bones.
Why was the attack on Chuška so fierce? Revenge is one possible factor. Intense battles against Albanian guerrillas and NATO bombings were claiming Serb casualties near Pec. And Chuška is the home village of the Kosovo Liberation Army's former top commander, Agim Čeku, whose father, witnesses say, was specifically tracked down and killed in the massacre. But does that explain why so many other men were lined up, machine-gunned, and incinerated? Toward the end of the conversation with Milan, the Bosnian Serb militia member, we asked if he felt any guilt for killing Albanian civilians. He responded as if the notion of sympathy for Albanians revolted him.
I couldn't care less for the Albanians. None of us cared. They're less than human. They're shit. I was completely indifferent to who lived and who died.
Another Serbian criminal turned soldier told us with a yawn, "Look, sometimes a baby falls in your knife. It was a war." The violence in Kosovo is not over. Though NATO helicopters patrol the skies and tanks rumble along the roads of Kosovo, it is now ethnic Albanians doing the killing. They retaliate daily against ethnic Serbs and Gypsies they accuse of being part of the war, burning Serb houses, shelling Serb villages, and murdering Serb civilians. Because the militiamen fled months ago, many of the victims are elderly people who have no means of escape to Serbia or Montenegro. This is survivor's justice of the least discriminate kind. Meanwhile, in the village of Chushka, a cooler form of justice is being pursued.
Yeah. How many bullets did you find?
We just found two bullets in here. Most of them are going through and into the field. And the
a Danish forensic team working for the Hague Tribunal collects bullets and other physical evidence of the alleged crimes committed here on May 14th. The evidence may implicate Slobodan Milosevic and other Serbian leaders. But the Hague Tribunal is not expected to go after many ground-level suspects. Local courts established by the UN are supposed to handle these cases. But Western legal experts doubt the capacity of local courts to handle such complex cases. The killers of Pech might very well get away. Survivors of the attack on Chushka, including a thoughtful 35-year-old geography teacher named Ali and his 27-year-old cousin Lula, the woman who recognized the photos on the computer, insist that the executioners and their commanders must be caught and convicted.
God is in our cruises.
I want to tell the world that we need justice, like a wound needs medicine. If you leave a wound open, if you never close it, it never heals.
You see these hands? With these two hands I collected the bones of my uncles, my cousins, my father. I found my father's remains left, but just parts of him. I didn't find his legs or his head, just his torso. And with these hands I placed him in the earth. As for those Serbs, the ones who killed him, they have their hands covered with blood. They belong in the Hague.
For NPR News, I'm Michael Montgomery. The Killers of Pech is a production of American Radio Works in cooperation with National Public Radio. It was produced by Stephen Smith and Michael Montgomery. Reporting by Adriatic Kelmendi. Editors Lauren Jenkins and Deborah George. Associate producer Stephanie Curtis. Interns Sean Madigan and Gabriel Zuckerman. The project manager is Nancy Fuchsian, and the executive producer for American Radio Works is Bill Buesenberg. To see photographs of the militia members and to find out more about the Killers of Pech, visit our website at AmericanRadioWorks.org. Major funding for American Radio Works is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Florence and John Schumann Foundation, with additional project support from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. American Radio Works is the National Documentary Unit of Minnesota Public Radio.